You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Babylon 5 ended a great war and united 100 alien races in peace. Danger didn't die. It just went underground with new heroes and new evils to carry the torch.
We need to make sure they all understand we will not be intimidated.
What is wrong with you people?
We have to set him against himself.
It's an entire new season of Babylon 5 with all new episodes.
And so it begins.
There is a hole in your mind.
What do you want?
No one here is exactly what he appears.
Nothing's the same anymore.
Commander Sinclair is being reassigned.
Why don't you eliminate the entire non-homeworld?
I see a great hand reaching out of the sky.
Who are you?
President Clark has signed a decree today declaring
martial
law.
These orders have forced us to declare independence.
I saw people get off their encounter-suited butts and do something.
You are the one who watches.
To Zahadu, who will die.
Why are you here? Do you have anything worth living for?
Think of my beautiful city. Right?
Giants in the playground.
Now get the hell out of our galaxy!
We are here to place President Clark under arrest.
Turn around. Very, very slowly.
Hello, Mr. Garibaldi. Good to see you again. I was wondering how you were doing. You haven't written or called.
Shut up.
Obviously haven't improved your manners.
Hello, and welcome to the Epsilon 3, a Babylon 5 rewatch podcast. Each week, we review an episode of the 1990s sci-fi TV classic, Babylon 5.
This week, Season 5, Episode 20, Objects in Motion.
I'm Paul.
I'm Dan.
I'm Sean.
And we are the Epsilon 3.
And the synopsis. As Shikar plans to leave Babylon 5 with Leeta, the crew thwart an assassination attempt, if I can say it properly, on Garibaldi and Lys with the help of an old ally. Written by JMS and Harlan Ellison, a collaboration, and directed by Jesus Trevino, this episode was released on November the 11th, 1998, and takes place from September the 1st to September the 5th, 2262. And the guest stars, Denise Gentile is back as Lys Hampton-Eggers, James Hornbeck as Casey, Marjorie Monaghan as Number One, stroke Tessa Holleran, Jeffrey Castillo as Guard, Walter Williamson as Paretti, Neil Bradley as Trunil, and uncredited are Kerry Hoyt as Medtech and Deborah Landis as Sonari. So guys, what did we think of this episode?
It was pretty decent, I think. It was a little bit better than last week's. I just watched this morning, but I didn't take any notes, which is bad, but you know, it was fine. It was good. It was good to see the assassin who didn't really stand out at all because you know, hey, wait for me, oh, I don't want to be down here, you know, with these guys, you never know what's going to happen, kill you. And I like that we got to see a little bit more of the inner workings of the comlink, which and they remembered to do the whole DNA thing this time. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was good. It was a little bit more of the inner workings of how things happen on the station, and well, we've got two episodes left, so I guess it's better late than never.
This is true. Dan?
Yeah, the episode, it worked a lot better for me. It sort of finishes it off, just as Sean was saying, it really needed to be squashed together as like a nice, neat way of tidying off the characters before we get, obviously, next week's episode, and then finishing off season five. You know, it was a good way of sending them and saying goodbye and allowing the characters, but also the actors, to kind of say goodbye to each other as well. We have another, you know, terrorist slash assassin slash bomber slash rando who comes onto Babylon 5 to cause chaos. But this time it kind of made sense because it's all been building to it. It's not just some guy who showed up with a beef who we've never met before. There is a reason why he's there, and we'll find out more at the very end of the episode why he's there. There were some moments where it made me unintentionally laugh when the assassin is about to kill or try to kill one of them, and then there's another assassin in the crowd because of things that happen in the episode.
Yeah.
I was half expecting another assassin to get up who wants to take it out on Sheridan, and then another assassin to turn up who just wants to take it out on, I don't know, the technician who didn't fix his replicator or something, I don't know. And then there's another assassin, and just it keeps on going because it just felt like that's where it was going. And they were all going to pay the price for everything they've done for the last 5 years.
Well, that's what happens when you hold an assassin's convention on the station.
That's true. Very true.
The Assassin's Guild.
Luckily, yearly. Just over in the corner. I knew that was going to bite me in the ass. It's like, it's your fault. It was a very competent episode again, just like last week. But because it builds on what happened last week, I think this one was a little bit more satisfying.
Yeah, I agree. I think this episode was a little better than last week's, which I thought was really good, so this makes this even better. I thought it was funny though, he said the assassin doesn't stand out at all, he's the only human amongst a bunch of Narns. and then Dan said at least this isn't some sort of rando turning up to kill somebody, and yet there right in front of him is a rando about to kill somebody. So yeah, it's it is a bit unintentionally funny at some points. the fact that he this assassin, and I'll mention it later on, he gets into this elevator, and they're with the guard. He says, "Oh, hold the elevator." Gets in. Oh, that was close. I didn't want to be standing down there for too long. Stabs him in the back. Really smug smile on his face. I've got the comlink. and then the scene cuts. What you don't see is the doors open and there's 20 security guards waiting for the mate to catch up with him.
Right. Yeah. I was waiting for that.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. He gets out of an elevator with no way of knowing who's about to open that door. It was like that when I got in. I had no idea. Yeah.
I thought of the same thing, but
yeah. Okay.
Plot convenience.
But yeah, that's right.
If we'd had more time, there would have been 20 assassins who try to get there and they all get scuppered by something that Zach has done to set it up. That would have been fantastic. I would have loved to have seen that.
That would have been a good episode earlier on in the series where Zach has just been promoted to security chief and he's going round solving all these crimes purely by bumbling around and accidentally doing things, coming around the corner and something is handed to him. He goes, "This is the murder weapon I've been looking for," all this sort of thing. That would have been so good. But then obviously his story arc has to grow up and become a proper security.
Although he did bumble into the solution to this one. It was only because he looked in the box and realized, "Hey, I mean, there's glue on the back of this. Yeah. What's going on with that?" Like, if he hadn't done that, he would never have solved the crime. It's so random.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, let's get on with the review. Number One has arrived at Babylon 5, and she is now a duly elected member of the Mars government. But she's having a bit of hassle with Zach Allen, as she is trying to get onto the station with an unauthorized passport. But Dr. Franklin comes to her rescue. She's looking for Michael Garibaldi, who's currently detoxing in his room by throwing up. It looks like he's been throwing up everything he's eaten in the last 12 years, just as Dr. Franklin and Tessa Holleran, Number One, arrives. She tells him that she has some news, which is that someone in the next few days is going to try and kill him. But what does this have to do with Lise and Garibaldi?
So within days of Mars declaring independence, every major corporation with ties to Earth was running for cover. They've been exploiting and strip mining Mars for decades, so they were scared, covering their tracks as fast as possible. It got so bad that in parts of Dome 1, you couldn't buy a paper shredder for love or money.
So what does this have to do with Lisa and me?
Well, after forming the provisional government, we went after their records. Offered immunity to anyone who would come forth and help us. Along the way, we developed sources inside most of the major corporations still working on Mars.
They financed some black projects by the previous government.
Corporations like yours, Ms. Edgars.
But I haven't done anything wrong.
No one's saying you did. But with the death of your husband, you now own one of the 10 biggest medical research companies on Mars.
It's a company that financed several black projects under President Clark's administration. Now, we know about the telepath virus he was working on, but who knows what else they were cooking up for the government.
William didn't bring me into any of that. He deliberately kept me out of it.
And now that she's in charge, they're afraid she's going to find out something she shouldn't know. Is that what your source told you?
They want Lee gone as well.
And because you're the sort of person who could help or expose their activities, they want you gone as well.
Great. Did they say who was going to do the job?
No. All he knew was that the hit would be going down in the next couple of days. My guess is they want it done before the two of you leave for Mars.
Two of you? Michael, is there something else you'd like to share with us?
Jakar is still being hounded by the mob, and Lita is still incarcerated. Jakar visits her in the cell and asks if she's heard about his offer of traveling the stars with him. She agrees it is a good idea. Jakar has to leave because everybody wants him, and Lita has to leave because nobody wants her. Sheridan has an idea to hide Garibaldi and Lise in unregistered quarters until things have blown over. Garibaldi says he can't stay hidden forever, but this is where Jakar comes in. They will stage an elaborate going-away ceremony for Jakar, which Michael will attend. This means that he will be put in a controlled, exposed situation with only one clear shot. They will force the assassin to reveal himself. That's a bit scary.
It's
Garibaldi
no
tells...
way will that backfire at all. That's
no,
it.
Absolutely no, what could go wrong?
It's foolproof.
No.
Yeah.
Garibaldi tells Sheridan that he and Lise are going to get married. He thinks they finally have a chance of getting it right. Meanwhile, on the lower decks, a security guard is getting into an elevator when a man calls out to him to hold the elevator for him. He gets in and thanks him for holding the elevator, and then stabs him in the back. He swaps the guard's communicator with one he has, and seems pleased with himself. Just as well as nobody outside the elevator when the doors open. Franklin has examined the body, and Zack tells him the guard was a new guy and doesn't seem to have been robbed. Neither of them can work out why he was killed. The assassin is back in his room, modifying the communicator he stole from the guard. The system is still locked because the DNA system does not match his DNA. Tessa and Sheridan are meeting in his office. She says that Mars and Earth are still not getting along, and they're drowning her in red tape. He says that's the problem with being a politician. You have to sit and listen to people you would have shot 6 months earlier. Sheridan says that wars of independence have often been followed by civil war. Her options are to do what she is doing right now, expanding her contacts. The Alliance still recognizes the Mars government. He says she could set up a diplomatic office on Minbar outside of Earth's jurisdiction. She says it would mean a lot to the people back home. He wants her to hang around before going back to Mars, as he has an idea. Meanwhile, the assassin has finally enabled the communicator to access the security channels using his voice control. Preparations are getting underway for Jakar's leaving ceremony. One of his followers says he can't leave, as his obligation is to either stay and teach, or leave and lead Narn.
They say you are leaving.
Yes.
You can't do that. You are an important figure to our people. You have an obligation to either stay here and teach or return home and lead.
My obligation is to do what I believe is right. If that means leaving, then I will leave.
You don't understand. I spent all my money to come here. To sit at your feet and learn from you.
There's nothing you can learn from my feet.
He is the one that has made all the statues.
And I am not responsible for your choices.
We put you in this position, Jakar. Our reverence is our gift to you. And you are responsible to us. You owe us. Without us, you are nothing.
Then I am nothing. Good day.
But I made these for you.
You made these?
To which Jakar takes the one in his hand and snaps it in half and tells him to go home.
You are the one who has been selling these.
Yes. It has been my way of honoring you.
Go home.
Don't tell me to go home. Don't turn your back on me, Jakar. Jakar!
The follower is not happy at all. Zack is talking to Dr. Franklin when he notices the guard's communicator has a sticky backing to it instead of being DNA genetically coded. He realizes that the communicators have been swapped and has access to all of the security channels, which is exactly what a professional hitman needs to know. All the Narns on the station are calling for Jakar, and the hitman is amongst them. Garibaldi arrives with Lise Hampton, Jakar, and the president, who gives a short speech. Just as Jakar is about to give his speech, Zack gives the go-ahead to put a high-pitched tone down the communicator channel of the assassin. The assassin puts his hand to his head and is grappled to the floor by the security guards. Just then, the Narn, who had his statue snapped in half by Jakar, steps up and shoots at Jakar.
Where did he get a PPG from?
They're just lying around these days. Get them anywhere.
It seems like it. Everybody can get one.
Yeah. It's a bit like America.
Not wrong.
Zack had spotted this and pushes Jakar out of the way, just as a security guard grapples with the Narn, forcing the gun to go off, which shoots Lise in the shoulder. In Medlab, Lise is being operated on. When Franklin comes out, he updates them. He says he's done everything he can, and now it's up to her, to which Jakar says she is strong. To which Garibaldi says he knows.
We look for things. You are strong.
Yes, make us go. Strong. He looks, and he knows there is something that he needs to look for to make it go. No, hang on. And he knows there is something he can do. He asks Zack to give him access to the assassin who was going to kill him. He gets his wish and takes him to Lisa.
You can't do this to me!
Shut up and sit down! I need a favor.
I'm not in the mood.
Tough.
Besides, it's not admissible in court.
I don't care. Look, we had a deal. You need me as much as I need you. Now, either you climb inside his head and tell me who hired him, or the deal's off. The hell with you, and the hell with your little war against the Psi-Corp.
Well, since you asked nicely...
Look, you can't do this to me! I've got my rights!
All right, who sent you? Who hired you?
The assassin resists very hard, but Lita gets through the back door.
He's actually fighting me. He's been trained in countering probes. He's singing songs, doing math. You forgot to carry the 7. That's better.
Push harder. Who hired you?
Yours.
Oops, that was a mistake. By getting mad, you distracted yourself from distracting yourself, and I slipped in through the back door. Nighty-night.
Touched by violence.
He's alive. But I fixed it so he won't remember any of this.
Who sent him? Who hired him?
The board.
He was hired by the board of Edgar's Industries.
Board? I figured it had to be somebody on the board of directors of Edgar's Industries. What I need to know is which one.
Not one. All of them. That was the deal. They all had to agree and back each other up in case things backfired. Of course, there's nothing you can do about it. There's no proof.
You just leave that to me. Thanks, Lita. I'm not sure if I'm going to get to see you before you take off, but...
Just remember our bargain, Michael. Help me create a force I can use against the Psi-Corps, and I'll give you the chance to strike back at Bester. If you don't pull that off in 2 years, when I come back this way again, well, consider that a sign of things to come.
Forgot to carry the 7.
Okay. It's funny the way that she's just like sort of, you know, acting the way, you know, sort of frowning and the eyes are going up and down. And then she says, but all the time she's talking about what's going on and what's happening. And he's sweating away like mad. Sheridan visits Jakar in his quarters. He was hoping that Jakar could stay a little longer so that he'd be able to say goodbye to Delenn. But recent events has meant he's had to leave early.
Yes? Mr. President, what can I do for you?
Nothing. I just wanted to come by and see you before you left. I was hoping you could stick around a little bit longer until Delenn got back from Minbar. She'd want to say goodbye.
I'd hoped for the same thing. But as recent events have demonstrated, my continued presence here will only cause further disruption. Best to leave as soon as possible.
He has managed to get a long-range survey ship with only 240 light-years on it.
I've purchased a long-range survey ship.
perfect for exploring. I'm told it can handle just about any sort of environment, and it only has 240 light years on it.
Maybe you'd let me take it for a spin around the block sometime. I've always had the greatest respect for you. I'll miss you.
Unnecessary. You see, I believe that when we leave a place, part of it goes with us, and part of us remains. Go anywhere in the station when it is quiet, and just listen. After a while, you will hear the echoes of all our conversations, every thought and word we've exchanged. Long after we are gone, our voices will linger in these walls for as long as this place remains. But I will admit that the part of me that is going will very much miss the part of you that is staying.
Shakar then dictates a message to be delivered later. Lise Hampton wakes to find Garibaldi asleep at her side in Medlab. She feels like she's been sleeping for years, which is probably the effect of the painkillers. Michael says in her delusional state, she's in the perfect position for them to get married right away. So she has to be delusional in order to get married to Garibaldi. Okay.
He's got her right where he wants her now.
Yes.
It's prime thinking.
He has a priest waiting in the wings. She tells him to get his ass in here. Shakar is waiting by his ship, and Lita joins him in handcuffs with two security guards, but she could probably get rid of the guards and the cuffs at any time. She proves this by taking the cuffs off herself. She said keeping them on made everybody feel safer.
I suppose we should go.
I suppose we should. I find I'm actually looking forward to seeing the universe with you alongside, Lita. Perhaps we'll find something extraordinary. Perhaps something extraordinary will find us. Either way, it's going to be quite an adventure.
I smell another book coming.
What a wonderful idea.
I could smell a spin-off coming. I think this would have been an excellent little spin-off.
It would have been a great, even like a half-hour sitcom.
Absolutely. Yeah. What would that be called then?
Beyond the Rim with Shakar and Lita.
Only Fools and Telepaths.
Only Fools. No, Telepath Chronicles.
The Narn Chronicles.
Yeah, where do you think we should go first? And she says, you can stop thinking about that for a start. You know, and then the whole thing is going to be like her saying, I know what you're thinking.
That's the catchphrase to the show every week. It's like, I know what he's thinking. Ah! And then it freeze frames.
Either way, Zach Allen appears to see her leave.
Oh, he's sad.
Oh,
and that ship looks like a stubby little white star.
Yes.
Yeah, but it's only got 240 light years on it.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Garibaldi gets in touch with Edgar's Industries board. They say that the idea of the assassination was designed by the head of security, who has just hung himself. But he's admitted it all in a suicide note.
Mr. Peretti, is it?
Yeah.
I see. By the way, how's your daughter?
Oh, fine. She starts at Vassar in...
No. The other one. The one back on Earth, the one that your wife doesn't know about. Mr. Everson, you're looking well. That's surprising, considering that little blonde that you've got on the side there in Syria Planum. I gotta tell you, she'd wear the hell out of me in just a few hours. My regards to your wife, by the way.
He has a new nightmare for them.
Mr. Amistoy, that woman that got spaced when you and Mr. Peretti here got a little out of hand.
Just a minute.
Oh, I know. You're wondering how I got all this information since I'm not the head of intelligence for the Alliance anymore. I mean, after all, that had to be one of your biggest fears, wasn't it? An alliance between Lise and someone in a position to dig into your past had to be your worst nightmare. Let me introduce you to the new head of intelligence for the Interstellar Alliance.
Hi. Pleased to meet you. I've heard so much about you.
That was just a short-term solution.
We've still got the problem with the long-term solution. Now, seeing as how I don't work for the government anymore,
I don't feel I have to play by the usual rules. And since Lisa and I are married now, we've got some plans for the future of Edgar's Industries. Now, part of all that money is going to go to repair the damage that you people did back home. Some of the rest, well, this is a check for 500,000 credits. It will be deposited in a secret account tomorrow morning.
If anything happens to Garibaldi or Lise,
you know, slip in the shower, fall down a flight of stairs, or die from anything other than old age, this money will be paid out to certain individuals who will take out each and every one of you. Now, I would have to imagine at 100,000 credits ahead, every mercenary between here and Earth will be out looking to hunt you down. Am I clear, Mr. Peretti?
As glass, Mr. Garibaldi.
Good. Good. Now, I would like all of your resignations on my desk before we arrive on Mars, or the rest of the information we have on you will be leaked to the media. I think that about covers it. Oh, Mr. Peretti. Leave the cigars.
Franklin and Tessa are having a glass of wine in the restaurant.
When this place was built, I think irony was one of the primary materials used in construction. Like the irony of you coming here just when most of us, me included, are getting ready to leave.
Yeah, I noticed that.
They're both workaholics.
On the other hand, maybe it's for the best. There's so much going on in my life these days that I can barely keep up with it.
You don't have to explain anything to me. You're talking to another workaholic, remember? I understand completely. It just wouldn't be, practical. I mean, you being here and...
And you'll be back in Earth Dome, working at your big important job.
It could work.
You know, I do have about an hour before my next shift starts. In case you wanted to celebrate your new job.
More than an hour or less than an hour?
About an hour and 10 minutes.
You go on ahead. You know how I like the lights. I'll take care of this. Check! Check, please!
I'm sure he must have a spare bed in his room somewhere.
At least a cot.
Something. Pull out. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Glenn has arrived back from Minbar. She says the facilities on Minbar are almost finished. Sheridan says he's going to miss Babylon 5. She says she wanted to say goodbye to Garibaldi before he left, which is perfect timing as he appears with Lise, as they always do in sitcoms. She leaves just to make sure that the ship won't leave without them, and Michael says his goodbyes.
I've never been really big on goodbyes, and this just isn't going to work.
It's all right, Michael, go on.
It's just that my family, my mom and dad, they passed away a long, long time ago. The two of you, and Stephen, and Jakar, hell, even Londo, you're the closest thing that I've had to a family.
He lists all of his friends that he's going to miss, all the people that have gone. Doesn't mention Ivanova.
She's not in this season.
No.
And she's already gone.
She's going to meet him on Mars. That'll be the other sitcom. So like, yes. We flip between two sitcoms. It's the couple out in space and the couple on Mars. Yeah. Space couples. There we go.
Space couples. That's it.
Space couples. And if one of us the odd one out, she turns up with Marcus hooked up to a machine. It's like, I kept him alive somewhere. He doesn't talk much. He's just sitting there.
Oh, look at him. He's stiff as a board. Delenn says she has never walked the entire length of Babylon 5 and asks Sheridan to join her. He says it's 5 miles long, but she wants to do it now. And they walk away hand in hand. Hopefully they were at one end and not in the middle.
Depends where the launch bay is, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, the launch bay...
They're going to have to circle back, yeah.
There's the demarcation part. Then there's the dock, then there's the launch bay, because obviously they have to house all of these ships. So there's probably about a mile and a half that they missed out there.
But you know what they didn't miss out on? They didn't miss out on this promo for another podcast right here on the ESO Network.
Check out the Modern Musicology podcast, where each week we talk about things like
what makes a great drummer,
our favorite rock documentaries,
songs we love by artists we don't love,
our favorite concert memories,
songs that should have been singles,
and all of our favorite music from the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and now.
Do not use Modern Musicology if you're allergic to it. Modern Musicology may produce itching, dizziness, vertigo, temporary blindness, or heart palpitations. Do not taunt Modern Musicology.
Ask your doctor about switching to Modern Musicology.
And trivia. When Franklin and Tessa are having wine, the waitress takes an empty glass from the table, in the long shot, when she is visible. In the next shot, a close-up of Tessa, the glass is seen being taken from the table a second time. Now, I must admit I didn't see this because I was too busy watching the actual program and totally missed it. When Franklin and Tessa enter Garibaldi's quarters, you can hear him detoxing from his alcohol abuse. This is, according to this person's trivia, this is actually extraordinarily dangerous to do without some form of medical supervision. Alcohol, what, throwing up? Alcohol is one of the few drugs that can cause death if you detox without a physician helping you. Franklin doesn't comment on this, so it can be assumed he is not supervising Garibaldi at the time. That's crap, right? So even if he's a doctor, he would still say something, no matter whether it's a patient or not. Mm-hmm. Simply, he could be helping him, and this could be part of it. And the fact that he's there, but not, you know, saying too much about it, could just be, you know, his way of dealing with it.
Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff that they don't show on screen.
Yeah,
I mean, and it's the future. Surely there's a pill for this, like, exactly, you can give to someone to detox.
Yeah, when he said you can hear him detoxing, and he says, "Yes, I'm detoxing." It doesn't mean anything. He's just throwing up. Anyway.
Yeah.
So that's it for trivia. Sean, are there any Star Trek connections?
As a matter of fact, Paul, there are. Once again, we have Marjorie Monaghan as number one, or Tessa somebody or other, who we haven't seen in quite a while. Well, we've mentioned her before, but she played Freya in Star Trek Voyager in that Beowulf-type episode. I didn't write the name of it down. And then we've got Deborah Landis, who played Sonari. I don't know who even that was in this episode. But she played on Star Trek The Next Generation's episode Dark Page as female Karen, which I don't know what that is, but that's what she did. And then we've got Carrie Hoyt, who played the med tech. She was in 16 episodes of The Next Generation as Operations Division Ensign. She was also a Romulan aide and a security ensign. And then she played in Star Trek Generations once again as Operations Division Ensign. And she was in 27 episodes of Star Trek Voyager as two different people, crewman Fitzpatrick and crewman Grimes.
Excellent. Yeah, that's exactly what I found as well. Yeah, that Kerry Hoyt, she certainly did lots of things in small parts in Star Trek. That was amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, so let's move on to our ratings. Our ratings are out of 5, and IMDb do their ratings out of 10, and they have given this an 8, which is obviously a 4 in our scale. Sean, what did you think of this episode?
I think this is the first time I may be agreeing exactly 100% with IMDb. I also give it a 4. It's a decent episode. We got some action. We had the killer and the whole scene with his funky glasses doing the electronics with his pen light. That was pretty neat. We get to say goodbye to Jakar and Lita, and it's emotional, and even the speech between John and Jakar was excellent as well. I don't think we mentioned that, where this is the first time you've ever called me John, and that whole scene was fantastic. So great episode.
Yeah, Dan?
The characters all made sense. That's it. All of their goodbye speeches made sense for everything mm-hmm. they've gone through. We don't get a mention of Ivanova and all this sort of stuff, but at least what was said made sense in the context it was in. And yeah, we had some great Jakar moments, you know, when he's breaking the statue and it's like, I wasn't responsible for you spending all your money coming out here. Mm-hmm. You're the one who made this. There was loads of little in gags. Yes, I wanted an assassin for everybody so that there's more drama, more tension, just ratchet it all up. And It threw me out as well when the assassin replaced the pad, but it's got a completely different design on it. Like, I would have thought Zach would have picked up. Hang on a minute, he didn't have the three line one. He has the one with the two bent circle bits. Like, it's completely wrong. Like, I would have thought Zach would have picked up on that, but no, that's fine. It wasn't until he picked up the glue. That's fine. Yeah, it's a competent episode again, and it does really well with the characters. It's not like the best episode ever, but it does it really well. So yeah, I'm also agreeing with IMDb. I'm going to go 4 out of 5.
You know, okay. I didn't bring this up earlier, but you remember when the assassin, on purpose, you see it, he's wiping the blood off. Like, I would have thought he would have used that for the DNA to smear it on his hand and then just put the friggin' thing under. He wouldn't have to do any electrical work.
Yeah, that's right. Or chop the guy's hand off.
Something.
And then have it up his sleeve. You know, like holding it. So he's got like this fake hand.
He's got the PPG inside it and like the middle finger lips down, and then it's just got the gun inside.
That's
it'd be great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's got no imagination, these assassins, haven't they?
So not perfect episode, but it was decent. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Paul?
So I think both of you guys are right. Yeah, this is a better episode than last week's. I enjoyed it thoroughly. I thought the leaving speeches and the getting together and everybody saying goodbye was good. Of course, you know, in real life you wouldn't get this where everybody finishes at the same time and everybody moves on, but this is the end of Babylon 5. We know we're getting an ending. You know, this is the end of this chapter of the story with these characters. I thought it was really good. Some really good ideas about the assassination attempt, how to draw the guy out. The assassin looked competent enough. It's just that he hadn't realized that they were onto him and failed in that respect. The whole thing was really good. A lot of good speeches in it, and I enjoyed it. I did these both of these the two episodes that we've just recorded, which are the last week's and this week's. I really enjoyed them both, and it's a bit of a shame that they've come at the end of the season. Finishing on a high, I suppose.
Well, we have two more episodes left, and all is not lost.
Well, you say that, and this is where we have to explain to our viewers that we are watching these episodes in a certain order, which is the JMS's order, the one that he likes that he says this is the way it was designed to run. And the idea is that this is Objects in Motion. We have episode 21 of season 5, which is Objects at Rest. And then you do not watch the last episode, which is Sleeping in Light, until the very end, until it's almost the very end, the very last episode. In the meantime, we go on to, next week we'll have our review. The week after next we'll have our season review. Then we go into 3 TV movies, and then we start the Crusades. Once we finish Crusades, we then go to another DVD movie, which is The Lost Tales. Then in the beginning, which was the very first episode that sort of was, that was filmed after the first season for TNT. Then we do Sleeping in Light. Then we do Deconstruction of Falling Stars, which is the last episode of season 4, which we haven't done yet, if people remember. However, if you're watching this in the future and you want to watch it in a different order, of course you can. You can order, watch it in any order. You can listen to these episodes and watch them in any order you like. This is just the way we're reviewing them, because this, as we have proven in the past, actually makes sense. So there you go. So my thoughts on this episode are that this is slightly better than last week. And last week I gave this a 4. I gave the episode a 4. This week, it's a 4.25. I probably undervalued that slightly. It could have quite easily have been a 4.5. But we'll keep it.
Go quite that far.
Yeah. It's not quite in the top 10, but it's certainly high enough in the top 20-ish, I suppose. Okay, so that is the end of this episode. Join us next week, where we will be discussing season 5, episode whatever it was I just said.
21.
Objects at Rest.
If you have any thoughts on this episode, why not send in some feedback to the epsilon3@gmail.com. That's 3 spelled T-H-R-E-E, not the number. Or you can find us on our Facebook page. Just search for the Epsilon 3.
Well, if you have any other problems, any other questions at all, just ask.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.